Last week, we began our exploration of Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, and we dealt with Inyanei Diyoma. In this year, I'd like to take a step backwards and tell you more about their lives and their personalities. Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish were more than debating partners. They were related to each other in two other ways. Rabbi Yochanan was the Rebbe, Reish Lakish was the Talmud. Moreover, as we shall see, they were brothers-in-law. Their lives were very different. Rabbi Yochanan, for the most part, led a very, very good life. He came from wealth. He was handsome. The Gemara says that his beauty mirrored that of Adam Harishon. He had a crimson complexion. So beautiful was he that he felt it his responsibility to sit outside the mikveh so that when women were tovel, when they immersed, they would see him before going home to their husbands. This was based upon the principle that if a woman gazed upon an object of beauty or a person of beauty, and then she could see that child would be beautiful. Lahavdil, we see, if those of you have gone to the castles in England and in France, you see that above the bedchambers on the wall, on the ceilings, you have murals of beautiful scenes. And this was basically the principle. Now, of course, Rabbi Yochanan did not gaze upon the women. He merely sat there and they were able to see him. When the question arose how he could do this, was he not afraid of an ayin hara? So the answer was that he is from the tribe of Yosef, and the tribe of Yosef are impervious to ayin hara. Because he wanted to study Torah, we are told that he was willing to sell off one field after another in order to do it. He was on a walk one day with Rav Chiya bar Abba, and as they walked past one field, he said, "I sold this field in order to study Torah." And when he walked a little bit further down the road, he said, "And I sold that field because I wanted to study Torah." After a while, Rav Chiya bar Abba became completely perplexed, and Rabbi Yochanan said to him, "What's your problem? I got the better of the deal, because in the end, I sold something which was created in 6 days, and I was able to acquire that which is eternal." But money lasts only so long. And the Gemara tells us that there was a time that Rabbi Yochanan had to make a very, very important decision. A decision that many yeshiva students have to make. And that is what to do at the time that the money runs out. So the Gemara tells us that Rabbi Yochanan had a study partner by the name of Ilfa. And both of them were running out of funds. So they decided, based upon the verse, Efes ki lo yeh v'cho evyo, that one has to see to it that he's not poor. They concluded that it's best for them to go out into the world and to make their parnasa. On the way out of the city, they sat beneath a wall which was somewhat shaky, and two angels in heaven looked down upon them as they ate their lunch. One said to the other, "Let's throw the wall down upon these scholars. Look what they did. They left Torah eternal in order to make a living." Said the second to the first, "That's not something we are allowed to do, because one of them is going to become a very, very great scholar. He didn't identify who it was that was to be the scholar. But the only one who heard this conversation was Rabbi Yochanan, because he turned to Ilfa and he said, "Did you hear anything?" And Ilfa said, "No." So Rabbi Yochanan surmised that it was about him that the angel said, "A great man is there. A great man will come from one of these two that are sitting there having their lunch." So he turned to Ilfa and he said, "You know, there's another pasuk." And that pasuk says, "Ki lo yechdal evyon mikerev ha'aretz," that there'll always be poor people. So if there have to be poor people, at least let me go back, study Torah, become a Talmud Chacham, and that is the road I wish to take, and let Torah be my lot in life. Now the Gemara in itself is very interesting, because we are told that at some point later, indeed, Rabbi Yochanan became the Rosh Yeshiva, but Ilfa chanced back to the city, and when somebody kidded him, he said, "Test me." He put himself on the mast of a ship, and he said, "Whoever asks me any question regarding a Mishnah or a Brisa that I can't answer, I will immediately throw myself into the sea and drown." So we really don't know, and one could speculate who it was that was meant to be the great man. But in any case, as history has progressed, clearly it was Rabbi Yochanan who went back to become Rosh Yeshiva, who actually is one of the greatest rabbis that we have in Shas, and upon him we have a tremendous, from him we have a tremendous number of mamorim, close to 1,500 or 1,700 mamorim throughout the literature. So we owe a tremendous amount to Rabbi Yochanan. As a matter of fact, the Rambam writes that Rabbi Yochanan was the editor of the Yerushalmi. Of course, Yerushalmi was written over many, many years. There's also a tradition that Rabbi Yochanan lived to be 400 years, but that's not something that we're going to spend much time on. Rabbi Yochanan had perfect recall. He remembered, he says, his midwives that were there from the time he was born. Now, I have to tell you that one of the Rabbonim that I was close with many years, over many years, was Rav Pinchas Teitz, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, who was the Rav of Elizabeth, New Jersey. And he told me that he knew the Ragatshava very, very well, because he lived in a city close to where the Ragatshava lived. And whenever he came back to yeshiva, from yeshiva, the Ragatshava told him, "I want you to come by and let's spend some time, let me understand what you've been learning," and so on. And he says, when he would come in, there would be a line of Rabbonim standing and waiting to hear what the Ragatshava had to say, but he would always usher in the young Rabbi Pinchas into his chamber and speak to him. So Rabbi Teitz told me that the Ragatshava told him that he remembers his whole life from when he was 3 years old. That's what perfect recall is all about. Rabbi Yochanan had that perfect recall. And indeed we will see, and a good deal of our hypothesis will revolve around the fact that Rabbi Yochanan is classified as a Sinai, an individual who had perfect knowledge of the Mamore Chazal of his time. And to this end, the Gemara tells us in Shabbos that when the question was raised as to who is Roy to be a head of a community, Rabbi Yochanan says that one has to see that the person is Baki. right? If he's Baki in one Masechta, Masechta Kala, Masechta Dikala, the whole question in that Gemara, then the person can be a Parnes al Hatzibur. But for him to become a Rosh Masifta, he has to be completely knowledgeable in, let's call it, the entire Shas. Rabbi Yochanan was a tzaddik from birth. The Gemara tells us, in fact, that he was a tzaddik even before he was born, as strange as that seems. The Gemara tells us in Yuma that it occurred on one Yom Kippur that his mother became ill because she had smelled a wonderful aroma which emanated from a particular dish that was somehow being prepared, and she felt that she had to eat it. Now, the understanding in those days was that it really wasn't the mother who was desirous of that food, but rather it was the fetus. And if the mother was not satiated, the understanding was that both of them were in peril. So those who were around the mother submitted the question to Rebbe and asked Rebbe, what should we do? So Rebbe said, what I want you to do is to whisper in the mother's ears and tell her that it is Yom Kippur. Now, of course, the mother knew it was Yom Kippur. This wasn't the question. So what was the point? The point was that the fetus should hear that it was Yom Kippur. When they whispered into the mother's ears, the mother immediately had no desire for any food, and immediately she was assuaged. So Rebbe said about this fetus, "Beterem etzarcha beten yetaticha." That verse, which is mentioned about Yirmiyahu Hanavi, that he was a prophet from the womb. So Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan is basically, it said of Rabbi Yochanan, Rebbe said about Yochanan basically the same thing, that this young man is going to be great, even from this, and even at this point, before he's born, he yet has tremendous kochos. And of course, as we said, this young man was Rabbi Yochanan. Reish Lakish, before we get to Reish Lakish, one last thing about Rabbi Yochanan, which is significant, and that is he didn't have a completely easy life, a life that didn't have any negatives to it, because, as he says in Brachos, he actually buried 10 of his children. So he did have a second side, but but by and large, one can say that Rabbi Yochanan's life was straight, and that it was not a bumpy road, and essentially this will give us a greater understanding of Rabbi Yochanan, where he's coming from, and his whole approach to life. Reish Lakish, on the other hand, had a completely different upbringing and early life. The name Lakish, we should mention to begin with, it means a late bloomer. And in some sense, one can say about Reish Lakish that he was a late bloomer. Reish Lakish comes upon the scene for us in that very, very famous story where he encountered Rabbi Yochanan at the Jordan River. Rabbi Yochanan, at that time, was in the water. And Reish Lakish leapt into the Jordan It's not exactly clear, the language of the Gemara is not clear, but the implication is that he wanted to attack him. Rabbi Yochanan turned to Reish Lakish and said to him, "Your strength should be for Torah." Reish Lakish replied, "Your beauty should be for women." Rabbi Yochanan said to him, "If you will repent, I will give you my sister in marriage, who is more beautiful than I." At that moment, he decided to repent, and then he wished to pick up his implements, his weapons. And the Gemara and the story goes on to say that he was not able to lift them up. We're not going to analyze this part of the story, but the general notion that we have from it is that Reish Lakish was a highwayman, and conjoined with other stories that he was the head of a band of thieves, and that somehow at this moment of encounter, at this point, he began to study Torah. And the implication that is often given is that before this time, he had not studied Torah. But that is not really something which is completely true, because there are many indications that Rabbi Yochanan, that Reish Lakish had indeed studied Torah before. There's a story which we find in which in later life, Reish Lakish was approached by a man who used to bring him water every day. And on one occasion, the man entered the cave that Reish Lakish was sitting at, and he stayed there to rest. He turns to Reish Lakish and he says, "Master, do you remember that you and I used to go to school together, whereas you were worthy to devote yourself to the study of the Torah, I was not so worthy. Pray for me that my portion may be with you in the world to come." To which Reish Lakish replied, "How can I pray that your lot will be with me when the way it works in Gan Eden," and we will have a chance to speak about this on other occasions, craftsmen, people of the same craft, had their own section of Gan Eden. And since you're a potter and I'm a scholar, surely you will not be able to come into my section of Gan Eden. But from the story, it is clear that at a young age, at least in the Cheder age, Reish Lakish did have formal training. We also find a statement in the Jerusalem Talmud that Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish studied together in the yeshiva of Rebbe, and that in fact they said, were it not for the fact that they were able to see Rebbe's, some say sandals, some say fingers that came out of the gloves that he might have been wearing, that sight was what invested us with that capability of studying Torah and understanding it to the highest degree. The point being that they were youngsters, and the seating in the yeshiva at that time was based upon one's status, and clearly they did not have front row seats. One can imagine they might have been on the third deck. But in any case, what they were able to see of Rebbe was not his face, but merely his toes or his fingers. And they considered just being able to do that to be a tremendous chus. So we can glean from that story that the fact is that Reish Lakish had studied before this time, before his encounter with Rabbi Yochanan as well. And then there's another story which we find in Erevin, where the Gemara tells us that Reish Lakish and the students of Rav Chanina once came to a certain inn, and there was a question with regard to constructing an Erev at that point, and Reish Lakish gave his view of what had to be done. And when the students came to Rav Ephes, Rav Ephes replied, "You have acted well in renting the property, and so that the Erev could be effectuated," which was the psak that Reish Lakish had given. Now, Rav Ephes died 2.5 years after Rebbe died. So, by all estimations, Reish Lakish had to be quite young at that time. Yet, he was already considered to be a formidable Talmud scholar. So, one can wonder along this way exactly what happened to Reish Lakish. And of course, there's a great deal of speculation involved, and understand that one is trying to put the dots together, and I can just give my understanding. You will hear the points that I'm making, and perhaps, if you wish, you can reconstruct it in a different way. One thing we know about Reish Lakish is that he was very, very strong. The Gemara tells us in two situations that he was able to best people who were quite powerful. In one case, we find that Reish Lakish comes into the Beis Medrash in the morning, and he sees that Rabbi Yochanan is despondent. And although he asks him many questions, Rabbi Yochanan desists from answering him. And when Reish Lakish asks him and inquires why he's not answering him, he says that my heart is not in it, because people came into my house and they stole my property. So Rabbi Yochanan, Reish Lakish was very concerned about this, and he said, "I will go after them." In fact, he did, and the thieves were ready to give him back half the money, but Reish Lakish prevailed and got the full amount of money from them. And then there's another story which we find in the Yerushalmi, that Rav Isi was taken prisoner in Safsufa. So when Rav Yonatan heard about this, he said, "Prepare shrouds for him." In other words, this band that had taken him prisoner are surely going to put him to death. Reish Lakish responded, "Whether I will kill or I will be killed, I'm going to go out, and I'm sure I'm going to rescue him." In fact, that was the case. Given the strength of Reish Lakish, there are those who suggest, based upon a strange story in the Gemara, that in fact, along the way, Reish Lakish had been seized by the Romans to become a gladiator. The story goes that at one point, Reish Lakish was in the presence of Ludian. Ludian. And the Gemara tells us, just to tell the story the way the Gemara tells us, is that the Ludium had a custom. And that custom was that on the very last day of a person's life, they would grant him his desire. When this group came to Reish Lakish and asked him, "What is it that you would like us to do for you?" He said, "I would like you to allow me to tie your hands behind your back, and then I will do what I will do." They agreed, and Reish Lakish went, took a stone, and hit each one and killed all of them, except for one, who looked at him with a sneering smile on his face. And Reish Lakish says, "Don't worry." And he came back, and he hit him once, and he too fell. So the question is, what really is this story all about? To understand the story, one must understand what gladiators were about, what was the point of their encounters in the Roman Colosseum, why is it that the Romans were so fascinated by these gladiators. So what we are told is that originally, at an earliest stage of the development of the society, they believed in human sacrifices. Along the way, they gave up on that. For whatever reason, I do not know. However, they came to the conclusion that instead of choosing a fair member of their own community, why not take members of other communities that Rome had captured and use these individuals to be sacrificed to their lord? And this is what the gladiator fights were all about. There was a problem, however, that they had. And that problem was, when one, lahavdil, gives a korban, when one offers a sacrifice, one must choose the fairest. How then could it be that these individuals who were slaves, uneducated, how could these people serve in the capacity of a korban? So what it was decided is that before they entered the arena, these gladiators would have to be raised up and given status. So we find in the writings that this was what they did. So they would take a gladiator, they would bring him into the palace, they would give him free rein, and there he wore the royal garments for several days. He was able to enter into the harem even, and in this way it was understood that he was developing pure blood. And on the very, very last day before entering the arena, they gave him what today we would call the last meal, the cena libera, and the idea is that this would elevate the individual to the highest degree. If one looks at the Talmudic story, one can see at least some element of this concept of the last day being granted one's last wish. And essentially what the story is telling us is that while Reish Lakish had been a gladiator, he was able to escape that life. But clearly, once he escaped from under the Romans, perhaps he was a fugitive, it's very hard to know, he hung out, didn't return to the Beis Medrash, he hung out in the forest with a band of thieves, and that became his life. But when he met Rabbi Yochanan at the river, it's not that he had not seen Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yochanan was a stranger to him. And perhaps the way the story goes, when he first jumped into the river, he might have just seen an older rabbi, because when one is 12, 13, 14, before one has a beard, and then a beard grows, one looks completely different. Could be he did not recognize Rabbi Yochanan when he leaped into the Jordan. However, once he spied Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabbi Yochanan said, Chazor Boch, why don't you return? At that point, the life of Reish Lakish changed. Now, of course, Reish Lakish sat at the feet of Rabbi Yochanan for many, many years. At first, he was his Talmud. Later on, we find statements which indicate that they were considered to be equals. Of course, for the most part, we paskin like Rabbi Yochanan, who was the Rebbe, as opposed to Reish Lakish, who was the Talmud. And for those who want to investigate further, there is many articles which are written as to whether this rule applies when they argue in the Jerusalem Talmud. But as far as the Babylonian Talmud is concerned, the halacha follows Rabbi Yochanan. But we do find even statements, we find statements which even indicate that Reish Lakish in fact surpassed Rabbi Yochanan. Reish Lakish took learning seriously. Next shiur we're going to talk about the fact that he was an Oker Horim, that he was an out-of-the-box type of a genius, but he nevertheless understood, as all of us should, that one cannot build Torah on insufficient knowledge. In order to learn Torah, one must really prepare and know the material before one walks into a shir. And the Gemara tells us that Reish Lakish would never stand before Rabbi Yochanan unless he had reviewed the Gemara, or the Mara, what we call today the Mara Mekomos, 40 times, Kineged, corresponding to the 40 days that it took to receive the Torah. Reish Lakish enlivened the shir. When Reish Lakish died at the hands of Rabbi Yochanan, or at the eyes of Rabbi Yochanan, as the story goes, Rabbi Yochanan was unable to live with the fact that Reish Lakish was no longer a Talmud in his shiurim. They sent in a replacement. It was a big Talmud Chacham, because they thought that he would be able to take Reish Lakish's place. And what happened was, every time Rabbi Yochanan cited a halacha, the rabbi would come and say to him, oh, I have this proof, that proof, or the other proof. And eventually Rabbi Yochanan said to him, what are you doing? Of course I know all of these proofs myself. But the difference was that when Rabbi Yochanan, when Reish Lakish was alive, what he would do, he would raise 24 questions, I would give 24 answers, and consequently there would be a full comprehension of the law. And without Reish Lakish at his side, Rabbi Yochanan succumbed, the rabbis prayed, and he passed on. This is the life of these two scholars, which we will be discussing in the weeks to come, and exploring the halachic positions.